I'm speaking today with Tawana Cadian, who is the Democratic nominee for Congress in District 10. Tawana, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for this office?
Well, I think that the people of District 10 deserve to have representatives that is truly concerned about them and will act in such a manner in representing the people and the needs of the people of this district.
Now, the district you're in is this sort of infamous district that runs all the way from Austin down to Houston, really from Travis County to Northwest Harris County, with a bunch of small rural counties in between. You know, how do you represent the districts of such a district like that? I mean, it's suburban, it's urban, it's rural. How do you represent the interests of a district like that?
Well, District 10 is really a great representation of what the entire country is like. Our entire country is diverse in its makeup, in that we have rural areas, we have suburban areas, we have those who are insured, those who are uninsured, we have the lower class, the middle class, and the upper class. So it is representative, a good representation of the country.
Okay. And, you know, tell me a bit about your background professionally and in politics.
I am a registered nurse. I have worked in a variety of facets as a registered nurse, from medical surgical supervisor to case management with the Texas Health Steps and Pregnant Women and Infants Program. I've worked in pharmaceutical sales and currently work as an RN educator for a nonprofit organization called The Gift of Life, which is an excellent organization that has been in existence for approximately 18 years. And The Gift of Life was founded by Regina Rogers in an effort to promote help for those women who did not have medical insurance or had very little medical insurance, and helping to provide free mammograms for those women. But it has expanded into also assisting with prostate screenings and education on testicular as well as ovarian cancer. So I am an RN educator and an outreach coordinator for The Gift of Life. A part of one of my outreaches is called Wise Women, and it's women inspiring, servicing, and educating. And it is a partnership with the local housing department in which we bring information and resources to women within the city who are on public housing. And it has been an excellent adventure, and it has been has had great responses for the women who are part of Wise Women.
Well, as someone who works in the healthcare industry, you're kind of on the front lines of one of the big issues of the day. You know, the Affordable Care Act. You know, from your perspective, as someone who works in healthcare, you know, what do you think, you know, what's your opinion of the Affordable Care Act, and how do you think it will benefit the people of Texas?
I am happy that our president has given the country the Affordable Care Act, and I do appreciate you for calling this bill for what it is, which is an Affordable Care Act. Unfortunately, those opposing this measure to provide health care for millions of America have given it another name, which closes down the table for discussion. This act is going to open the door for millions of Americans who do not have health coverage to now have the opportunity to be seen by physicians, to have coverage for healthcare issues, and there's so much more involved with the act, including regulations on insurance companies, in that, you know, women won't be charged higher premiums because their gender is considered as a pre-existing condition. You know, those other excellent elements which allow for that age group of people who are not yet 65 to be able to buy into a health care program for those who currently don't have. So there's so many different avenues, and I think and I see that this Affordable Care Act is trying to assure that everyone, regardless of their age and regardless of their financial situation, they will have access to something that is so pertinent. As a nurse, one of our nursing mottos was, it's easier to prevent than to cure. And the simple, one of the simple options here was saying to the insurance companies, you know, medical pre-screening for cancers will be covered. That is major, because a late diagnosis is far worse to cure than early detection. So it's those type of things that encourage me to support the Affordable Care Act.
Now, obviously the Affordable Care Act is, you know, it's a big complex piece of legislation. I think everyone expects that there are some things that it's going to do that are going to work better than other things. What opportunities do you see to, you know, enhance or improve it down the line?
Well, I think one major opportunity, and I'm not sure if this is the line of answer that you may be looking for, it is going to be to educate citizens. Right now, this Affordable Care Act is allowing us the opportunity to educate the citizens on just what is a right, not necessarily a privilege. Educating the citizens on things that they don't know. A lot of citizens don't even realize that they have been taken advantage of or have been misused, not only by the insurance companies, but also perhaps those who are supposed to be representing them, making deals with insurance companies. I think one of the most awesome things about this is now we're having the ability to have an open dialogue and make citizens aware, regardless of their party affiliation, of what this Affordable Care Act can do for them and their families, not just now, but for the future. We're talking men and women living longer lives. We're talking fewer children having to bury their parents because of late diagnosis. This has an impact that is
going to
last for generations.
Okay, you know, the issue of women's health has been kind of a flashpoint in the news. Contraceptive care, as we speak today, abortion services. You know, in Texas, a lot of, you know, there's a recent story about how many clinics are closing due to the state's refusal to take federal money for the women's health program. You know, again, as someone who's been on the front lines of this, you know, what's your view on, you know, what has been going on with, you know, healthcare for women?
I'm deeply saddened right now. As of today, as of last night, even with the latest comments made by a congressional representative out of Missouri, I think it's very sad, and it's apparent that women's health and women's lives, in the eyes of many, and unfortunately many who are in a position of representing women, their value has been diminished. When you take, for instance, as we've already mentioned, the Affordable Care Act, when you take, for instance, that you have a group of congressional representatives that have tried to repeal this act 31 times, and a part of this act says that insurance companies can no longer charge women a higher premium just because they're a woman. When you take, for instance, the Lilly Ledbetter law that says women should receive equal pay for equal work, and you think those congressional representatives voted against that, and then you have the idea of saying we're going to cut down funding to institutions such as Planned Parenthood when it affects women who are going to be getting mammograms and pre-screening. This is not a partisan issue. This is a nationwide issue. I think for some strange women, for some strange reason, women's health is under attack. And this statement by the Missouri congressman that said that a woman's body has a way to stop that whole thing from happening if it is a legitimate rape. It did something to me to hear him say that. And for the hundreds of thousands of women who have been raped, I can't imagine what this man's statement said to them. I know how I felt. What did it do to them? It's almost as if he's saying, it's your fault. It's almost as if he's blaming the victim. And the statement is so preposterous. Number one, we don't categorize rape as anything but what it is. It's rape. It's not legitimate. It's not illegitimate. It is a horrible, brutal attack. And not only women are being raped, men are being raped as well. And it is just speaking again to this mindset that women's lives are not valuable.
Okay. Let's talk about something else now. Let's talk about the economy. What sorts of policies would you pursue or support to get the economy kicked into a higher gear?
As I have stated at some point during this campaign, we as a nation, we as individual communities and individual cities, we all hurt when one citizen is without a job. I think it is going to be imperative, and I'm not necessarily sure of... I have this idea that wherever there's a job available and wherever there's a citizen that is eligible for that job, that it should be filled. I get amazed because I see these, you can go on Munster.com or Indeed.com and you see job opening. And I'm thinking millions of Americans are without jobs. Not all of these are still receiving unemployment benefits. Why are these jobs not filled? I simply don't understand it. I think we are to encourage those business owners who do have availability to not only fill them, but also those who are outsourcing jobs into other countries. They need to bring these jobs back to the United States. It is going to be imperative. You know, I am 39 years old, and I know that while I was in kindergarten, fifth grade, and high school, and college, et cetera, there were Americans that were here, you know, holding the country up for us while we got our education. And there are plenty of people my age that have advanced degrees that are still looking for jobs, and many of those jobs have been outsourced to other countries. So one thing that we are going to have to look into is promoting and encouraging and perhaps even enforcing businesses to stop outsourcing and provide the jobs for those here in America.
You're a graduate of Prairie View A&M, and Prairie View A&M in Waller County has been for a long time now one of the focal points in the states for voting rights.
Correct.
There's a landmark decision that allows Prairie View A&M students to vote in Waller County, but it always seems like every 2 years there's an issue with that. And obviously there's, you know, this is all, I mean, obviously in the cycle and previous election cycles, there's much bigger push against voting rights going on. Talk to me a little bit about this. What are you seeing, and what do you want to see done for voting rights?
I want to see those students at Prairie View A&M University be able to freely exercise their right to vote, and I want their votes to be counted. I think that for these children, young people, to have to battle for the entire 4 years or 5 years, depending on their degree, that they're at this university to vote, whether it's a presidential election, a gubernatorial election. That is absolutely uncalled for. It is a right. And I think that enough is enough. When I attended Prairie View A&M University beginning in 1991, that fight was ensuing even then to ensure that the students had the right to vote. And enough is enough, you know. That really, enough is enough.
Okay. And of course, you know, like I said, beyond Prairie View A&M, there's a whole national push from one side, predominantly, to, you know, restrict voting rights. You know,
absolutely uncalled for. It's time for citizens to stand up for their rights. It is a right. This whole idea about creating a voter ID on the basis of potential fraud, that is a joke. It's absolutely a joke when you compare the number of votes that were casted in the state of Texas to the number of so-called fraudulent cases, and the majority of those had to deal with mail-in ballots, which a voter ID law would not impact one way or another. The percentage of fraud came to, I believe, a 0.0001%. What this tells me is that the idea is not necessarily to prevent fraud, but it is to prevent people from exercising their rights and getting into office who they want. And I believe those who are proponents of this voter ID law, they should be ashamed of themselves. But more than anything, we as citizens must stand up and let them know, again, that enough is enough. We will not go backwards. We absolutely will not go backwards and allow this to occur.
Now, every representative, you know, deals with national issues, but also deals with local issues. What do you see as being the issues that are important specifically to your district? You know, the local needs for your district that you would like to work on as a member of Congress.
For my district, and as we mentioned at the beginning of this, our district is comprised of a melting pot of people and issues, and we mirror a lot of the entire nation. Healthcare is going to be major. We are in District 10 in the state of Texas, which has the most uninsured citizens in the country. So it is going to be major. It is important to me that the citizens of Texas have the opportunity to have health care. What is important is jobs. Jobs are going to be vital. We want to support our small businesses. We support our small businesses, and we want our citizens to be able to have employment. A lot of people have been hurting, and when your citizens are out of work, it impacts your community. It impacts the small businesses. The people love the small businesses, but when you don't have the money to go and support those businesses financially, then eventually it will trickle, you know, in almost like a virus from house into the small business and then into the large business, into the schools. So healthcare and jobs are going to be a major issue. And I will say also, we want to make sure our children have adequate resources and access to education. The cuts that are being proposed in the state of Texas to public education, it literally and figuratively will hurt our future. The children really are our future, and I want to make sure that the things we are doing today, our children are watching, our children are hearing. I want our children to be secure in knowing that we fought for the best for them, and we're giving them the best, and not necessarily that we are taking away. We want the children to be equipped. We want them to be able to compete in a global economy, because there's a big world out there, and we want our children to be able to sustain our state and sustain our community in the next 20 years, 30 years, when we are retiring. And they need to be equipped in order to do that.
One local issue from that district that made the news in the last couple of years had to do with BAE Systems losing a contract to build military equipment. Can you give us a quick update on where that stands and, you know, what you think needs to be done about that?
Well, right now, I don't have a full update on the latest status of that. However, I will look into it and get back with you. I don't know what the latest status is.
All right. I mean, it hasn't been in the news much lately. I hadn't heard anything.
The plan is closed, the contract, and again, that speaks once again to jobs being lost.
Okay.
Here.
I mean, do you have any thoughts on, do you have any thoughts on how incumbent Congressman Mike McCaul handled that situation when it was going on?
I don't want to make a misstatement, because I don't know exactly what all he did or what all he didn't. But I do know that the result is that the plant was closed and jobs were lost and households were impacted and thus communities were impacted.
Okay. You know, I mean, District 10 was initially drawn the way it is in the 2003 redistricting, and it's similar. It's fairly similar in shape to the way it was then after the 2011 legislature. But as you know, the D.C. Court of Appeals has not ruled on the lawsuit of the state of Texas to get the plans pre-cleared. We're under a interim map right now. What, if anything, do you think should be done differently in the way this district is drawn?
Well, I think with the way this district and every other district in the state of Texas, as well as the entire country, I think they should be drawn fairly. Not cookie cutting out districts to ensure that a particular, and in our case, a Republican takes a seat. I know that the district has been drawn and shaped a certain place, but what I am focusing on is that the people within District 10, young, old men and women, will look at the facts and they will make an informed decision on who actually represents them, who has their best at the forefront. Not any deals, not any businesses. I want the people of District 10 to choose me, because I will take their issues to heart. My door will be open regardless of a party affiliation. That is what, and you know, back to the comment made on yesterday in regards to a legitimate rape, that is something that not only American women, but American men and women with daughters and granddaughters and sisters and mothers, they should have taken offense to it. It's time out for just voting, especially when you see and you hear, not just see, but you hear that a representative does not have you at heart. They don't have your best interest at heart. I want some of the Republicans as well as independents to vote for me. I will represent him. When I go out and I speak to men, women, young and old about early detection, and about what to do if you do find a lump or a nodule here or there, I don't care about their party affiliation. I don't care about how much money they have. My goal is to help to save your life. My goal is to give you pertinent information that you will in turn take home to your family to help save their lives. And I'm running on the Democratic Party ticket. But as the representative for District 10, I will be representing all of the citizens of District 10.
All right. Tawana Cadian, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much. I sure appreciate your time.